B-Pod Studios.
Back by a bulletproof 30-year warranty.
Opening draw in Dallas. Their opponent today, Columbus Crew FC. And you can catch it again starting right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub beginning at 2 p.m. Up next, it's going to be the Bruins looking to extend their 18-game point streak against Ottawa. The puck's drop is at 7 right here on the Sports Hub Bruins Radio Network, driven by the all-wheel drive Honda Pilot. And then the nightcap tonight, it's the Celtics visiting LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers. This one's going to be joined in progress after the Bruins. It's going to start at 8:30 over on our sister station, 105.7 WROR. College basketball, Zion Williamson not going to play tonight for Duke as they go up against UNC. This is going to be his fifth straight missed game due to a sprained knee. And LSU coach Will Wade suspended indefinitely by the university following an FBI probe into college basketball corruption. Spring training action, Red Sox about to get underway against the New York Mets. Sports Hub headlines brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Winners here, get your car ready at Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Go to getanoilchange.com to save 15%. I'm Tim McCona, Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Next update, 30 minutes.
Have an Amazon smart speaker in your home or office?
What's all that about?
Just say, Alexa, play 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Okay.
And listen to Boston's home for sports.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk soft and out of town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. So, yeah, Chris, when you were gone last week, you were in Indianapolis for the scouting combine.
Yeah.
I decided to have a theme for the show for the 3 hours, and it was trying to apply common sense, because we live in an increasingly stupid world where this is the dumbest time to be alive, in my opinion. But I thought we would try to apply common sense to sports stories, especially locally. And then one that had started to gain traction, unfortunately, and now has come to fruition. The Chiefs have formally proposed today an NFL rule change that would give both teams at least one possession in overtime. And to me, this defies logic and common sense. It's just them whining. I think this is as egregious as when Bill Polian and the Colts changed the rules for the wide receivers getting mugged in the early aughts because, our soft receivers can't deal with you're chucking at the line of scrimmage. This is pathetic. If this was another team, I would find it a little more digestible, but that it's the Kansas City Chiefs who are butthurt that they didn't get a chance to touch the ball in the AFC Championship game. Oh, it's deplorable that they're the ones that are going by this, and they're the ones that have formally proposed this rule. Like, oh, you're so upset about this. And those that make the argument for changing, like Felger does, like, well, it's a quarterback-driven league.
Yeah.
You want to have your stars out there and have an opportunity. Like, I don't care about that. It does come down to this for me. Make the stop. You have stars on defense. As bad statistically as the Kansas City Chiefs defense was last year, you have stars. You have Dee Ford. If he didn't line up offsides, you're not talking about this. You win that game.
Yeah.
You have Eric Berry, granted, maybe on one leg, but still, he's a star when he's healthy. Justin Houston, you have stars. Your stars are out on the field. Make a stop. Make a play.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree. I mean, you know how I feel about the overtime rules. You know, I'm obviously invested in them, but I just look at it. Both teams know. Like, before that possession even starts, the defense knows, as long as we don't give up a touchdown, Patrick Mahomes gets the ball.
Sure.
You know, and so obviously the Patriots offense knows if we score a touchdown, the game's over. That's fine. But if you can make a stop there, the advantage is yours at that point. I mean, first of all, the advantage is yours if you make the stop, because let's say the Patriots kick a field goal. Then you're going to go for it on every fourth down. You have four downs to make everything to get in the field goal range. And the other part of it is, you know, you score a touchdown, the game's over. That's it. And so, you know, there's a couple of different ways, I think, of looking at it. You can look at it from one standpoint of you didn't get the ball first. The other team did. That's a huge disadvantage. You never got the ball. But the reality is, if you just do not allow a touchdown, I think the team that gets the ball second actually has an advantage. They know exactly what they need to do. They have the extra down. You're going to just go for it because you're supposed to. And if you score the touchdown, the game's over.
This is what happened in the NFC Championship game. You know, like, this is forgotten.
I agree.
You know, the Saints
had
the ball first. You have a god-awful interception by Drew Brees.
Brees threw a pick.
And then the Rams go down. Legatron kicks the game winner. That's it.
That's it.
They're the deserving team. All right, you want to make the case for that terrible non-PI call and regulation, but fine. As far as overtime is concerned, the right team won. They moved on. They took advantage. They made a stop.
I mean,
that this was the Patriots. Like, we're not, if it went the other way, we're not having this conversation.
Well, exactly, and that's my point. Like, I don't think Kansas City wants to change the rule. If they win, if Mahomes gets the ball and they win the game, are they advocating for a change?
No,
I don't think that they are. And the other part of this rule too is that they're basically saying that the team that would get the ball first under this would be the team that won. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is the way I interpreted it. Would be the team that won the coin toss to start the game. Well, I wouldn't say they wouldn't get, they get the ball. They would get the choice. That the team that won the opening coin toss, the one to start the game, would get the choice in overtime as to whether they wanted to take the ball or not.
Yeah, and the other thing too I brought up in terms of common sense.
And oh, by the way, Kansas City won the coin toss in that game.
So you mean to tell me? So like, just think of this hypothetical, right? Now you're going to change the overtime rule. The team kicking off, they kick off. There's a return for a touchdown. That team that kicked off should have an opportunity to get the ball back. F off. Like, if you allow a touchdown on the kickoff to start overtime, you deserve to lose. You do not deserve to see the ball.
Well, I mean, look, if you just want to take the sudden death aspect out of it, you know, that's fine. If that's what the preference is, you don't. I mean, I think sudden death is exciting. And so there's an element now with these rules. The idea of these rules, the genesis of it was, let's not have a team get the ball on the coin toss, march down, get inside the 40, and then basically kneel three times and say, we're just going to kick the field goal. I thought that was unfair, and I thought it was not really reflective of what football is about.
Agreed.
You know, this is different. I mean, the game's only over if the team marches 80 yards, 75 yards, and sticks it in the end zone. I think there should be some sort of reward for doing that, and it's that the other team doesn't touch the ball, and there should be some sort of penalty for allowing that. The other part here is, what about player safety? Because that's supposed to be something that's really big in the NFL. So the longer you make these guys play, the more chance there is of injury. So do you want to make this rule change for every game, including the regular season, or do you just want to do it for the postseason? And then if you just do it for the postseason, now you have two different sets of rules. The regular season rules would be the rules as they exist now, and the postseason rules would be, okay, everybody gets to touch the ball. So when I read the Chiefs' proposal and I see some of the stuff that's been written on it, like, I think Mike Florio basically endorsed it on Pro Football Talk, nobody's talking about player safety.
Yeah.
It's just, like, that's not another, an issue.
It's a contradiction to the way that they talk about, you know, player safety now. So it's that also flies in the face of this, of why they would want to change this. I hate it. And how about this, too? Just come down to this. Okay, you got the game to overtime, but I don't know, Chiefs maybe take some responsibility, or Patrick Mahomes takes some responsibility for overthrowing Damian Williams by 10 yards when he was wide open down the right sideline. Like, you made your mistakes. You ultimately deserve to lose. You had your opportunities to win the game. Oh, I hate this. I knew that, look, the wheels were in motion. I hope it doesn't get approved, but it feels like it's going to.
I don't know. It'll be interesting. I mean, I'll be interested to see if they marshal the votes, because one thing is that this is their proposal. You know, it's not something from the competition committee, so it's not a recommendation from the competition committee. Let's see how many people really support it. You need 2/3. They need 23 other teams to go in on this with them. And are 23 other teams that motivated to change this? Especially when, wait till you get to the owners' meetings, and I guarantee there'll be discussion about the unintended consequences of this. That's always what happens. These rules come out and then they start talking about unintended consequences, and somebody will bring up, whether it's the medical side of the NFL or whatever, well, player safety. That means, but, oh, by the way, right? And I know you want to get to the calls here, but what's the thing? They're trying to get rid of the kickoff. So if you have this, if each team gets the ball, then isn't there going to be an additional kickoff, which isn't that the big concussion play?
Right.
So let's have an additional kickoff just to make sure, you know, Patrick Mahomes touches the ball, but there could be a lot more concussions on what they basically said is the most dangerous play in football.
The other thing I saw today is that the Denver Broncos, they're essentially stealing this and tweaking it a little bit from the AAF. They're proposing an alternative to trying the onside kick.
This one I like.
Yeah, I think I kind of do too. Instead of kicking off, the team would line up at their own 35-yard line for what's in essence a 4th and 15. If the team gains the 15 yards, they maintain possession. If not, defense takes over. I kind of like it.
Well, I like it because basically with the new kickoff rules, recovering an onside kick is almost impossible.
Sure.
So that's the thing. You know, I prefer the onside kick, but with the rules that they have, you saw this year, the onside kick was basically completely neutralized. It was not really in any way a viable strategy. This, I think, would make it fun again so that late in a game, a team could get the ball back.
Let's go to Mike in Framingham on these rule changes. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you? I think that they should adopt the college football overtime rules. Each team gets the ball from the 25, and you see what happens, and you keep playing until somebody wins out.
Yeah, I hate those rules.
I do, too.
Take special teams out of it. You're starting out too close. You're already in field goal range. I mean, I've mentioned this before. If you want to do something like that, I think you can do it. But I think that both teams have to start at, like, their own 40. Because, I mean, it's the NFL. If you start at the 25, you're already in field goal range. So you'd have to start at, like, your own 40 or something like that and do it that way. And then you're taking one element of the game, special teams, completely out of it. There's no punting. There's no... There are no kickoffs, which I agree. I mean, kickoffs are a dangerous play, but there's no potential for a kickoff return or a punt return for a touchdown to win the game.
Yeah, the college, as much as I like college football, it gets, when you get these games going to four overtime fight, it's stupid. Yeah. And that's where, too, it flies in the face of player safety and all the things that they talk about that. Like, they would never be able to adopt that in the NFL. Frank the Tank on the trade for Michael Bennett. Hello, Frank.
Hey, guys. Look, real quick on the rule changes. I mean, enough. Let's just call a circle a circle. Why don't we just have it at the end of the regular season that the Patriots are just not allowed to enter the playoffs so that everybody can have a fair... Yeah. This is the biggest bunch of BS. I mean, come on. Go to the game, play the game, and take your ass kicking if it happens like a man. I'm so sick and tired of this crybaby crap.
Frank, you're so right. Now, and oh, by the way, how come the Atlanta Falcons didn't propose this?
Right.
I mean, did they? Maybe they did and I missed it. But, I mean, wouldn't the Falcons, who lost the Super Bowl, if you're going to propose this cockamamie rule based on this, shouldn't they have been the ones who came up with it?
And nobody had a problem with overtime with St. Louis and New Orleans. So, I mean, the bias is there. I don't care what Felger and Maz complain about during the week. It's there. It's an anti-Patriot thing, plain and simple. Now, to Bennett, I love this move. I love the player. There's nothing wrong with the Patriots having backup if they lose Flowers. However, I want Flowers. I want Flowers and this guy on the line.
Me too.
Cannot have enough mean SOBs on the defensive line to kick more ass.
And thanks for the call, Frank.
Thanks,
yeah,
Frank.
That ideally, that's how it's going to work. It'll be Bennett on one side, Flowers on the other.
Agree.
And this is more about Adrian Claiborne, and it's his ass that's going to get cut here. Like, that's what makes sense.
That's what Reese wrote.
Or what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about Michael Bennett, this trade with the Eagles yesterday, because there are stats that back up how dominant he can be as a pass rusher. And then there's really no gray area, because there's other stats that make you look at Michael Bennett and say, how the hell is this even going to work? Oh, my God. And then some of the comments he's made about the guy who's now the defensive coordinator of the Patriots, that would be his former coach in Tampa Bay, Greg Schiano. You then again have to ask, how's this going to work? We'll talk about Michael Bennett with you next here on Gaspar Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Plymouth Rock, a company you can trust. That's a hat trick.
Gaspar and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
You might be on the trading block, or that you might not be back in Philadelphia. So I ask you, I say, Michael, what is your thoughts on the current state of Michael Bennett in the Philadelphia Eagles?
Well, I don't know what's happened with the Eagles. Of course, you always want to be with the team that you play with. But at the same time, we all know it's a business, and you want to be able to, you know, make money whenever you get the opportunities to. And I feel like if you're on the trading block, it's just a part of the game. But at the same time, I still know that I'm still one of the best players in the NFL. You look at statistically last year, quarterback hits, TFLs, and how I approach the game. I love football, and whatever team I'm on, I'm going to take that same attitude and go out there and be a nasty player and try to dominate on our defensive line and be the best teammate and the best player I could possibly be.
Are you affected by it, though? Like, you see your name being on Twitter, and you see your name on NFL Network. Does that affect you as an individual?
Well, because you're on vacation, you're like, wait, you're like, what's happening? And so you always caught off guard whenever your name is brought up in the trade blocks or being traded, but you understand that, you know, people want to acquire your services, and I think we're in a tough situation to start part as far as the salary cap, and I'm not willing to take a pay cut. I actually want to pay raise at this point, and so whatever happens, just to know whatever team I go to, I want to get paid more than what I'm getting paid right now.
All right, so that's Michael Bennett yesterday morning on Good Morning Football on NFL Network. Gaspar Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub, saying he ain't going to take a pay cut. In fact, he wants more money, but he has been traded from the Philadelphia Eagles to the New England Patriots. in theory. I mean, it's going to go through next week when the league year officially kicks off. But it's for a fifth rounder of 2020. The Patriots, in return, get the services of Bennett, who's still under contract for 2 years, and also a seventh rounder in 2020. So looking at some of the stats here, Chris, there's some that really benefit the cause of Michael Bennett and how disruptive he can be as a pass rusher. Last season alone, Bennett's 30 quarterback hits, the fourth highest mark in the NFL, behind such names as Aaron Donald, Fletcher Cox, and Yannick Ngakoue with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Those are household names when it comes to pass rushers. He's a force. Here's more. Michael Bennett, 73 quarterback hits over the last three seasons. Only Aaron Donald has more. Dominant. This is a great pickup for this defense, right? Well, there's bad, too. So with the good, we take the bad. There's really no gray area. Here's Michael Bennett's penalties in the last five seasons. Ready? In 2014, he had 16 of them. Followed that up in 2015 with 12. 2016, 10. 2017, 15 penalties alone for Michael Bennett. Last year, thankfully a down year for him, 7. But he certainly has been one of the more penalized players on defense throughout the NFL in the last five seasons. Not good. But wait, it gets worse. Michael Bennett has 33, yes, count them, 33 defensive offside penalties since 2014. The Patriots as a team have 10 in that span.
Wow.
Yeah. So, there's going to have to be some coaching going on here from Bill Belichick and new defensive coordinator Greg Schiano, someone who had actually been the boss of Michael Bennett in the past when he was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Schiano was the head coach there. How will that work? Well, funny ask. In the past, it didn't work great. Here's some of the comments from Michael Bennett on his former head coach when he was with the Seahawks in an interview that posted on the New York Times. They were talking to former players under Schiano who hated him like poison. I think he just wants to flex his power, said Bennett. He has small man syndrome. I still talk to guys who were there, and trust me, there's not much respect for him in that locker room. Again, talking about Greg Schiano, who's now essentially his boss here with the Patriots. And this one's a winner, too. This was with a radio interview with a sports station in Portland, Oregon in 2015. He was asked by the host, do you think you could ever play for a guy who's a stiff? You don't strike me as a guy who could play for a stiff. Bennett said, no, it wasn't fun. It did that before. His name is Greg Schiano.
That's great.
So, can be a dominant pass rusher. The stats to back it up. He had 9 last year, 30 quarterback hits. Dominant. Dominant is Michael Bennett. But a lot of bad stats come with that, too. And the presence in the locker room, we'll see. We'll see. Could be volatile at the very least, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll probably get the lowdown from Martellus on what you can and can't do, you know. But obviously, I mean, they're twins, but they're different people. They'll have slightly different personalities. And so maybe what was a fit for Martellus won't be a fit for Michael. We'll find out. The other difference is that, look, Michael's won. You know, he has been to 2 Super Bowls with the Seahawks. He has a ring. A lot of times for the Patriots, what helps them is they bring in these guys that have had a lot of individual success, but not team success. And they get to the Patriots and they say, okay, I better fall in line here and do what they do because I've never won and this must be how you win. Whereas Michael Bennett has won in Seattle where it's pretty free-flowing, you know, at the end of the day. And so he might be like, well, we don't need to do this to win.
So Adam Schefter had that tweet yesterday saying that now it sounds like Martellus Bennett wants to come out of retirement like Jason Witten after a year off and play for the Pats because he's never been able to play with his brother.
Yeah.
Do you think he does? And could that be a fit a year removed from football?
I mean, yeah, sort of work with the McCourties. Let's see. Martellus Bennett, I think, if he had a year off and was able to get healthy, he's a guy that's played here before. He was productive. I know the Patriots liked him. I know Brady liked him. He played through a lot of injuries. He was good blocking. When he was healthy the first time here, he was a good pass receiver. You know, Gronk was banged up that year. They needed Bennett to catch passes, and he did a good job doing it. Why not? Regardless of what happens, look, I don't know what's going to happen with Gronk, but I do know this. If he comes back, he has to have more support and help at that position than he's had the last couple of years.
Definitely.
Dwayne Allen could block, but really, there was nothing in the passing game that guy could do. And so if Gronkowski decides to come back, there has to be somebody else who can pick up some of the slack in the passing game.
Cam and Taunton on the Patriots offseason. Go ahead, Cam.
How's it going today, guys? This left tackle position, because it really feels like they're not going to pay Trent Brown. And, you know, that's a big risk. As, you know, Felber said this, you pay him, he could come in at 425 for all we know. I'm not comfortable with basically a rookie in Isaiah Wynn protecting the blind side of a 42-year-old quarterback. Do you think there could be another Trent Brown-esque trade out there maybe for a cheap rental for a year? I mean, I know Skarnecki is the master, but I it doesn't matter. I'm not comfortable with that. The guy, it was questions whether he could play that position in the first place, and he couldn't make it through his first camp, and your quarterback is a 42-year-old statue. You got to do better than that at left tackle.
Preach, Cam, preach. And the sirens are going off, too, because they know you're right. It's not a hot take. You and I are right on this. We're out on an island. They should have franchised Trent Brown. I don't give Trent Brown a long-term deal,
yeah,
because odds are it'll be Alan Branch part two. It's like, got that money, now I'm going to show up fat and high.
Yeah.
You don't do that for Trent Brown, who has had some, you know, laziness attached to him in the past. And he, when he got here, the report, you know, there was word that he didn't even like watching tape. We get it, that Dante Scarnecchia is the offensive line whisperer, right? And they got
a
great year out of him.
Great.
He was awesome in the postseason. I just think for insurance sake, you tag him. You have him, you bring Isaiah Wynn along, and I feel more comfortable there. But like Cam said, Wynn coming off a torn Achilles, that's going to be the guy protecting the blind side of your 42-year-old quarterback? Ugh, I don't like it.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to address this in the draft again. They would have better intel than we would on where Wynn is at. I do sort of agree with Cam's point, though, that there were questions around the league originally whether Wynn could play left tackle, whether he had the length to do that. So now if he's coming back from an Achilles and you take away some of what was his greatest strength, which was his speed and agility and mobility, and he loses a little bit of that and he doesn't have the length, then you might have an issue there. So I think you do have to protect yourself, and I think maybe you can end up doing that in the draft. In terms of, is there another Trent Brown type guy out there? I don't know, because honestly, like even last year, I mean, I knew who Trent Brown was, but he had played mostly right tackle for the 49ers. The Patriots made a projection, and it was a brilliant one. So maybe there's somebody else they see out there that they can project into that role.
Howard in Randolph, you are next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Howard.
How you doing, guys? I have just a question about Trey Flowers. They did not franchise him, so that means if they lose him, they do get a pick, but nothing in the first round, right?
Well, they could get a compensatory pick, but the
right.
earliest it would be after the third round, and it would be in 2020.
Right. Now, if they had franchised him, it would have been a $17 million franchise tax.
Yes.
But if any team had offered him money that the Pats didn't match, they would have gotten two first-round picks. Do you think any team would have done that to get Trey Flowers?
Yeah, it's become such a deterrent in today's NFL, because you got to think of it like this. Not only do you have to pay the guy a boatload of money, but you have to give up the first-round picks, too. And so it's really become such a huge deterrent that you don't get teams. I mean, you could make the argument you could franchise him and try and trade him, and basically say, hey, you'd have to give us two first-round picks. How about one? Or you'd have to give us two first-round picks. How about a second and a third? You can certainly make that argument from a Patriots standpoint that they could have done that, you know, franchised him. But the problem is, if you're trying to sign him, and I think this is why they didn't do it ultimately, if you're trying to sign him and you franchise him, it's like, well, now you've set a baseline expectation for pay. And I think for the Patriots, I don't think they want to be anywhere near $17 million a year.
All right. Sounds like a Patriot is going to sign with the Miami Dolphins. Do you have this, McCone?
I do. I thought about breaking in with the sounder, but I don't think it's worth it. You think so?
Way to blow the tease there, McCone.
I know. Jeez, what a letdown. I was like, oh, my gosh.
It's Brady. Yeah. It's Brady, yeah.
Well, Tim McCone's going to get you caught up with the Sports Hub headlines. Don't worry, people. You don't need to hear it. It ain't that important. See, they call it a radio tease, McCone.
This is breaking sports news.
He'll get you caught up in the headlines. Stay tuned for that. We'll come back and take more of your calls here. I see some Celtics calls still hanging. And also, there was an update to the Robert Kraft prostitution story. We'll get to that as well. There's a little update to that this morning. All that right after the headlines here with McCone. It's Gaspar Murray, 98.5 Sports Up.
Right out of bounds. First down, Patriots.
Congratulations to Super Bowl MVP Julian Edelman from the home of the Pats. 98.5, the Sports Hub. You're listening to Gaspar and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
There are people down there in that area, I'm told, who say that this story is going to heat up and get a lot worse. And I don't mean involving Robert Kraft. I'm talking about with all the human trafficking that has gone on down there. I'm also told that Robert Kraft is not the biggest name involved down there in South Florida, and we'll see what police turn up in the report.
All right, so that was Adam Schefter, ESPN. The news broke of Patriots owner Robert Kraft and his misdemeanor crimes, the two misdemeanors he's been charged with, soliciting prostitution in Florida. It's Gaspar Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. And this story continues to twist and turn. And I would think, considering the charges, and, you know, I typically shrug at crimes of vice like this, I couldn't care less. But embarrassing, nonetheless. So I just figured, in my dumb brain, like, hey, you know, cop to it. Say you were lonely. Whatever you have to, you know, just make yourself essentially like a martyr for this. And I think people will accept that. It's easier to digest and move on. And sure, you're labeled with this for a little bit, and then people forget. You know, the world we live in now, people forget news stories like this in a couple of weeks, unless you keep going and you lawyer up and you stick with it. And he's gotten quite the high-powered law team here together to fight these charges. And it's like, okay, why are you hiring guys that have, you know, defended Jay-Z before, and, you know, some of these lawyers he's had, it's like, what, to fight two misdemeanor charges? Kind of doesn't make sense. Well, then we find out that Cindy Yang, the founder of the Florida Spa, where Robert Kraft was busted for soliciting prostitution, the story posted the Miami Herald yesterday, Chris, where there's photos of her and her, she has some, not a relationship, but there's a closeness between her and the president,
yeah,
Donald Trump. So sure. It's like, okay, what's going on here? She's has some sort of access here.
Yeah, that's the best word, access. She has some access.
Well, there's a little bit more to this story today, courtesy of MotherJones.com, and I know it's a left-leaning website, fake news. But they have found out that this company that that Cindy Yang also owns, not just these day spas that she's owned, it's an international business consulting firm that provides public relations services to assist businesses in America to establish and expand their brand image in the modern Chinese marketplace. This is how it reads on their website, that it was mostly in Chinese before it was pulled today or yesterday. And this company says its activities for clients included providing them the opportunity to interact with the president, the Minister of Commerce, and other political figures. The company boasts it has arranged taking photos with the president and suggests it can set up a White House and Capitol Hill dinner. Wow. So this woman didn't just happen into Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, just had to use the bathroom.
Right? And pay $20,000 for a high-priced dinner so she could take a photo and a selfie with the president. No, she's got some access here. She's got some juice. And as this unfolds, well, there's a little bit more to this. How this involves Robert Kraft, I don't know. Like, you're like, when we talked about this yesterday in Felgramaz, and I brought this story up earlier, you're like, I still don't understand what you're trying to, what are you dancing around here? If I had to guess, just again, my guess is, look, considering the proximity to where Mar-a-Lago is, this chain of day spas that this Cindy Yang owned, and she sold off to her parents. So she, let's be honest here, again, using common sense like we did, applying it to these stories like last week, like there's still some involvement here. If I had to guess, again, just my guess, is that, you know, the president at least knows from talking to Cindy Yang, like, and he has since said to other, you know, friends and business associates, like, hey, after you finish up 18 holes at Mar-a-Lago, I know where you can go to get service. Like, maybe it's just as simple as that.
So you're saying it's like when you give me a restaurant recommendation.
It's as simple as that, Chris. Yeah.
Friends recommend places to other friends.
No different than my little web series, Treat Yourself. Like, yes. Hey, you want to know where to get this done? I'll tell you the best place. That's all.
So it's like you recommend Eastern Standard. You're saying the president potentially, possibly, maybe recommended Orchids of Asia.
Simple as that. That's what my gut tells me. Am I wrong?
Now I understand.
Perhaps. But maybe this is why Robert Kraft is lawyered up so much, because he just doesn't want to have his name associated with this in case the thing devolves a little bit. I don't think that, look, do I think that the president knew about, like, human trafficking? No. I'm not trying to make that kind of a connection. I just think it was kind of like old boys club type stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about.
Let me ask this. Why would it take until... So do you think then that is there any evidence, like, would there be any, I guess they're paying it in cash, but would there be any evidence in the books or anything in the system that Kraft had been there prior to the two times we know about for the sting?
I don't know. You know that I don't know.
Like, why, if it were recommended by the president, why would he just start going now?
Well, maybe it's been for quite some time.
Yeah, that's my question.
Yeah. And that's what I'm assuming here.
Yeah.
And this is where the involvement is. But look, really, I want to bring it up because we took some calls yesterday in Felgramaz. We're like, this is just some woman that happened in there, and that can happen. You can pay for a plate and go. Like, no, you had to be vetted. Or this woman, Cindy Yang, got the nod from the president or someone in his circle. It's like, yeah, she's okay. She can come in here.
Sure.
And she's trying to set up, you know, other Chinese businesses so that they can have access somehow.
Yeah, sure.
To set up Lord knows what. But really, to me, what it comes down to is it's kind of the old boys club thing. Like, you know.
So what's her company? So her company is her company trying to connect Chinese entrepreneurs with that want to do business in the United States, or is it American companies that want to do business in China, or both?
I think from my understanding of what I read in this article, it's about Chinese business people that want to come here and try to set up shop here, or maybe somehow, you know, set up trade between the U.S. and whatever their companies happen to be, you know, some sort of dealings going on.
Well, since we're engaging in wild speculation, I now will, you know, oblige and engage in my own wild speculation. There's a 40% chance this woman is a spy.
For China.
Yeah, maybe. I would
buy that, too.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, so, you know, to be fair to both sides, I suppose, because I'm reading from a tweet from Geraldo Rivera here.
Who's close with President Trump and has been for a long time.
But he writes here, being missed in reaction to the Mother Jones investigation, to the excellent Mother Jones investigation of the massage parlor partying at Mar-a-Lago, is the probability that the parlor and Robert Kraft were targeted by the local prosecutor, an activist Democrat, precisely because of their relationship with Donald Trump. Now, look, there are those on that side trying to take down Trump and look into all that kind of thing, so maybe that has to do with it, too.
I don't know. I mean, it could just be that human trafficking is happening in his jurisdiction and he wants to prevent that. I mean,
sure.
I would hope that that would be – I think that's awfully cynical. And I also, like I said, you have to consider the source. I mean, Geraldo is a, you know, a longtime friend of the president, and I think somebody who would be inclined to try and – not only defend him, but also dismiss and discredit anything that could potentially reflect poorly upon him.
Yeah, but boy, it's like there's more photos that have
like
been dug
Geraldo's
up from
the equivalent, you know, sort of some of these Patriots guys that are in the bag for Belichick. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, like, he's got his guys. It's funny, though, because now, like, the every time you open up social media within the last 24 to 48 hours, there's more photos that people have dug up from this Cindy Yang just, like, hanging at the White House.
Well, she's just the Forrest Gump of South Florida, obviously.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. She just happened to be there. Yeah, just a happy-go-lucky gal that happened into a photo or two. Okay, with that, we will move on to our final segment of Gaspar Murray. Now that Chris is back, we'll do five questions for Chris that got nothing to do with sports. As we segue into the New England Revolution today, at home, we have a triple header for you here on the airwaves. We got the Revs, we got the Bees, the hottest
big
team
day
in hockey, and then the Celtics and Lakers tonight. Quick update, because what did you just say, McCone, that who's out for the Lakers for the rest of the year?
Brandon Ingram.
And shoulder injury?
Yeah, arm injury is what Sham said. So arm injury is done for the year.
Wow. All right. So
they are waving the white flag, man, in Lakerland.
What a disaster. Okay, five questions for Chris Gaspar. Got nothing to do with sports. We'll do that next here on 98.5.
This is Gaspar and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I got five questions for Chris Gaspar of the globe. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five. One, two, three, four, five.
I got five questions. I hope this segment ain't too wild.
All right. Five questions for Chris Gaspar of the Boston Globe. Got nothing to do with sports. Time we wrap up the show. Each and every week, as long as time permits, and Chris is here. All right, Chris, question number one. We were discussing Leaving Neverland, the Michael Jackson documentary on HBO a little while ago during a commercial break. So since this thing's release, I think it was just a week ago, The Simpsons have decided to spike that old episode where Michael Jackson voiced the guy in the nut house. Some radio stations, at least in other parts of the world, I think like New Zealand, Australia, they've pulled all of Michael Jackson's music.
Yeah.
So is this too harsh of an approach, the cancel Michael Jackson, or should people be able to make their own decisions?
I think it's a little too harsh, you know, to be. I mean, you can't erase the guy from pop culture history. He's just too big a part of it. But I do think you have to hold him and his estate accountable for what he allegedly did. And I do think it should spark a larger discussion about trying to prevent that type of abuse moving forward.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope, I think, if you start doing this. People should be able to make their own decisions. I'll tell you, having watched this thing, and you can't unhear when you hear it, what you hear.
It's devastating to watch.
I was saying, like, I remember reading when they showed it at Sundance that they had therapists waiting outside the theater, and it's like, okay, is this like the old 1970s horror movies? Like, when you go to see Poltergeist, like, you won't believe it. There's actually barf bags in the theater. Like, okay, calm down. This is a bit. Oh, no, it's that bad. It will shake you to your core. You can't unhear it, and Lord knows I will never hear PYT the same way ever again. And now, like, since I got into my car the other day, actually one of our stations here in the Beasley family had a Michael Jackson song, and I was like, you just can't hear it the same way. But you should be able to make your own decision, because it's slippery. Like, if you really look into some of Mick Jagger's behavior in the 70s and whatnot, like, You could then make a case to start pulling Rolling Stone songs off the air. So people should, I think, be able to make their own decisions on that. Question number two, Chris, something far more lighter. Pete Davidson and Kate Beckinsale, they're now an item. Your thoughts?
Wow, I mean, this guy, does anybody outkick his coverage like this guy? Like, I don't know. I mean, I just think, like, you know, honestly, so I'm just going to be as blunt as I can be. I want to know what he's working with.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it has to be, like, next level.
Like, if he were to get married, his vows are, I will take you in thickness and in health. Like, he's got to be working with, he's got to be working with something serious.
Yeah, man. I mean, he has to be bringing it. I mean, this has to be elite. Like the LeBron James of...
Yeah.
You know?
But wait, so, but people seem to be, because, I mean, people are mad about everything on social media, but this, it really triggers people. Like, what's he doing with her? And she's one of the hottest women of all time.
Yeah,
and
is.
To me, you got it wrong. It's not a Pete Davidson is ugly thing.
Okay.
It's a Pete Davidson isn't funny thing. Even in the rare occasion that SNL is funny, like last week, he ruins any of the good sketches he's in. He's just a dud.
I agree. He's not good. And so it's funny. Beckinsale has been saying she likes funny guys.
He's not funny.
He's not funny. I agree. I don't think he's funny at all. And, you know, I wish him the best. I know he's dealt with some mental health issues, so I hope he makes it through that. And if this is how, you know, banging these incredibly hot chicks is helping him do that, then power to him. More power to him.
Like that, he's got to...
It is mysterious. It's one of the most mysterious things of our time, though, really.
It's he's this generation's Adam Dervitz of Counting Crows. Remember back in the...
Oh, yeah, that's
every
right.
Every time you picked up an issue of Us Magazine, it's like, how is he with her? What's he doing with Courtney Cox and Jennifer Aniston?
Wasn't he with Kate Hudson?
I think he was with her, too.
Yeah,
Adam Dervitz of the Counting Crows. Like, okay, musician, we get it. But, like, that was like me with Dreads. You have no business being with the women of that caliber. Man. Here we are.
Game has to recognize games.
He's got
to
be like Secretariat down there. Question number three. Here's how bad our road rage is nowadays, Chris. A recent poll has found that for every 100 miles you drive, you swear 41 times. That's pretty. 100 miles. 41 swears to 100 miles.
Well, that's
Do you curse too much behind the wheel?
Oh, totally. My wife would be the first to say, oh, I am. Oh, man. I'm like, I'm kind of like Kyrie before that plane ride where, you know, he's like, oh, you know, the competition's out on the court. It's not in here. Like for me on the roads, it's all competition. You know, everybody is competition and there can only be one winner and it better be me.
That's how I drive. I make no apologies for it. And Lord, I had to pay the price for it. I've had my license taken away from me twice. Younger years.
I once had to go to a driver re-education class.
Everyone's not guilty in those classes, as you well know. Everyone's got an excuse and a story and it was the cop's fault and I didn't see the sign. I've sat in two of them, Chris. They're awful. It wastes a whole Saturday. I've been there a couple of times.
Yeah.
But I drive like the roads are mine. That's
well, you're paying for them, as I like to point out. You did pay for those roads. They are yours.
An emu has been loose in Virginia for a few days. It's been spotted several times, apparently, but nobody has been able to catch this emu, Chris.
Yeah.
What is one animal you wouldn't want to come face to face with?
Oh, man, that is a tough one. I don't know. I would say maybe... I don't like skunks. Like, I know this is going more like, hey, I wouldn't want to be face-to-face with a lion or a tiger, but the idea of being sprayed by a skunk is terrifying to me.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong on this, I think the only way to get that off is to bathe in tomato juice.
Is that true?
Yeah, because the oils in the glands of the skunk are so, they're so deep, and it gets into your body so much that like, you can't get out by just taking showers and baths.
I will say quickly, you know, I do a lot of media stuff. It's at Beasley. There's other, you know, stations I do stuff for. One of these media outlets, their parking lot seems to have a lot of skunks. And every time I walk, I am petrified that one of them is going to, like, jump out and spray me.
They ruined my Burberry coat, Daddy. I can't wear this anymore. It has nothing to do with you getting sprayed. It's the clothes getting ruined.
It's me.
For me, it's a bear. Like, I don't buy for a second that, like, oh, no, just roll up in a ball and it'll play with you.
Uh-huh.
Until it bites your ass and then starts chewing on you like
a piece of beef jerky. Well, they also have razor sharp. Their claws are so sharp. Like, one swipe, you're done.
Final question as we wrap up here. This week, we lost Luke Perry. Is there an actor or actress from your younger years that you would like, you would be genuinely sad if you saw pass too soon? And maybe it was Luke Perry.
No, actually, I'd say I was always a big Jenny Garth fan. So it would be Jenny Garth.
Of course.
I would be sad.
You and the Blondes. I felt like this Luke Perry thing, and I wasn't even the biggest 90210 fan. For whatever reason, it's just I think you attach him to your youth type thing. And I know a lot of people felt this way. It was like, oh, part of my youth died. Because, you know, I just...
Yeah, I hear that. I mean, he was pretty good. I mean, honestly, though, and I'm not... I mean, obviously, condolences to his family and everything, but this would have hit me more to my core if it were Jason Priestley.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like anyone from that era. Yeah. Like, it now happens when, like, these grunge rockers, like Chris Cornell, the Soundgarden,
oh, yeah.
he died recently. It's like, ugh, there goes youth. Yeah. And there goes the show. To Sean Silver and Tim McCone, Tracy Clements producing the show today, and for you if you checked in, appreciate it. Talk to you Monday with Felger and Maz, and of course for you as well, Chris. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We have, coming up next, the Revolution of the Columbus Crew, their home opener down in Foxborough.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.